Hey, what's up, everybody?
And welcome back to Mile High Podcast episode, what number is this? 365. And I'm back.
Yeah, it's been a couple weeks, two weeks since you've been here.
I've missed you guys. It felt really, really weird.
Yeah, it did feel weird. But you know what? Ian filled your spot just fine.
I know, Ian, you did great. People loved it. I listened to it. I had a little bit of time to listen to a bit of it.
Thanks.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. He did amazing.
Thanks, guys. I'm happy to be back in the cave, though, and I'm happy you're back as well.
I love how you call this the cave.
It's cave-like. It's dark and dank.
It's great. It's over there. I love being over there. I've only got to sit there one time.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know. Sitting up here is a different experience.
It's bright. It's intense.
Bright lights. Mm-hmm. And it's a big desk.
But I like being next to you.
Yeah. Hi. Anyways.
Go left.
We'll get on with the show here. But today we're taking a look at the case of Carly Gousset. She disappeared and there's been nothing since other than a few little updates.
Well, I don't know. To me, it felt like there was quite a bit more. So I first covered this case back in 2020, and it's one of those cases that has always really stayed with me. There was something so eerie about it and weird, and it still is very much that way. But I've always been curious. And then I saw that some new information had come out. And I think it did fill a couple of holes for me.
Yeah.
Sort of. So I wanted to revisit it. I mean, Carly just seemed like such a sweet girl. And, you know, when you let your mind go of what could have possibly happened, it's, I mean, just beyond upsetting. And I've just always wanted to know what happened and would love for her family to, you know, finally get answers after all of this time. Yeah, because it's now been...
Since 2018
yeah.
is when she was reported missing, 16 years old, literally vanished without a trace. We can kind of trace her to Highway 6 over in Bishop, California, or near there. And then the trail goes cold. There's nothing.
It's like she truly just vanished.
And so, you know, you can kind of... You can obviously piece together the events leading up to her disappearance, but even that is, there's so many questions that remain and a whole lot that just doesn't make sense. Some of it does make sense, especially the circumstances and, you know, kind of the struggles that she was going through at the time, but still, there's just so many unanswered questions here. And I mean, this was, I feel... pretty thoroughly investigated at the time, at least. Mm-hmm. We don't know how much investigation has happened since then. But yeah, I mean, the FBI got involved. Multiple local authorities got involved. I mean, a widespread search was done. And there's just not been a whole lot. So obviously, with cases like this, it's always important to keep the story alive, keep, you know, Carly in people's minds and thoughts. And you never know if she's still out there. She could still be found. Yeah.
Yeah.
But a very important one at that. So let's just go ahead and get into it.
Okay.
Shall we?
Yeah. Also, our producers are here. Janelle and Even.
Even Steven.
What's that, Even?
And Even Ian.
Even Steven.
So to give you a little bit of an overview before we get into things, October 12th, 2018, it started out as a very routine day for the Gousset family. Melissa had taken her two youngest sons to a trick-or-treat event, like a trunk-or-treat kind of situation, in the small city of Bishop, California, while 16-year-old Carly went to a football game with her high school boyfriend, Donald. However, that all changed when Carly called Melissa, telling her that she needed to be picked up immediately because she was terrified of something. After Melissa picked up her stepdaughter, she learned that instead of going to the game, Carly had smoked weed and was scared that it was possibly laced with something that would make her feel extremely paranoid. Melissa spent the night trying to calm Carly down, feeding her, and also recording her words in hopes of showing her the footage later on when she was sober and sort of teaching Carly a lesson. Finally, the two of them settled into bed together and went to sleep. However, the next morning when Melissa woke up, Carly had vanished. And now 7 years, dozens of tips, searches, and timelines later, the question still remains, where is Carly Gousset? In March of 1998, Carly's birth parents, Lindsay Fairley and Zach Gousset, gave birth to her older brother, Kane. 4 years later, on May 13th, 2002, they gave birth to Carly Lane Gousset, and their family lived together in Bishop. While Carly had a good relationship with her brother and parents, the marriage was becoming increasingly toxic. According to Lindsay, Zach drank and became very aggressive with her. Sometimes his emotions would overtake him, and he would put his head through the drywall of the bathroom. So, very intense. And Lindsay alleged that eventually these arguments between the two of them got physical. Lindsay admitted to being the aggressor and sometimes got physical as well. Regardless, the relationship was definitely tumultuous, and the environment was far too volatile for two small children. So when Carly was just a few years of age, Zach and Lindsay ended up getting a divorce. Now, at first, Lindsay was granted full custody of the children, but she and Zach still co-parented. And then, you know, they adjusted to the separation pretty well. But only a year later, Lindsay moved to Rock Ridge, which was around 2 hours away from Bishop. And not wanting to remove the children from their community in Bishop, Carly and Kane stayed with Zach, although they still had regular contact with the birth mother as well. Then in 2006, Zach met Melissa Phillips, and the two of them immediately fell in love. Within 3 years, they had two more sons, Cole and Cody, and they married after Cody's birth in 2009. And by this point, Zach and Melissa had been granted full custody of Kane and Carly, and Lindsay had another son of her own. Again, while Lindsay still saw her kids sporadically, she admitted that she was, quote, promiscuous during this time, and it was best for them to have a stable environment, and that was something that Zach and Melissa could provide at this time. So for a while, Lindsay sort of became the fun parent, you could say, taking the kids to drag races and demolition derbies. And by all accounts, Melissa had become Carly and Kane's mother, as she and Zach did the day-to-day parenting. Still, though, they did have plenty of time for fun. They were a very outdoorsy family. They would often go camping, shoot guns, and dirt bike. And throughout all of this, they forged a tight-knit bond between one another. Her parents described Carly as often just wanting to hang out with her family, and sometimes she would even want to just sleep with her younger brothers and parents just to be close with them. And as Carly came into her own, her older brother became her best friend in the world. She spent her days drawing, swimming, walking her dog, or just hanging out with the family. While Carly was a cheerleader when she got into high school, she also spent her free time fishing and hunting with her brothers on weekend trips into the outdoors.
Because the Gousset family lived in Bishop, California, which if you look this up on a map, is out pretty much out in the middle of nowhere. It's a very small town, and it's at an intersection for major tourist activities. You've got the Sierra Nevada mountains right there, so obviously lots of camping, great places to go shoot guns, dirt bike, all that fun stuff. And then you've got Death Valley there as well. So it's kind of positioned between these two areas. But in a town like this, and I know from personal experience because I grew up in a very small town, where there's not a lot to do, especially for teenagers. And this is the case with Bishop. You know, there's the after-school activities, extracurriculars, you've got sports, maybe some clubs, things like that. But really, other than that, the only other thing you can do is maybe get a part-time job, which is what Carly did. She had a part-time job to make some extra cash. But unfortunately, in communities like this all across the U.S., there's usually a lot of drug use going on. Drugs are widely available, and when there's not much else to do, you know, a lot of teenagers, at the very least, maybe smoke some weed. And this became the case with Kane as he got into his teenage years. He started smoking weed pretty regularly and embracing a, quote, pothead lifestyle, which created tension with his family. Once he even called Melissa and told her that he and Zach had gotten into a physical altercation. Kane even voiced some of his frustrations online, posting on Facebook that he wanted to emancipate himself before he turned 18, which I think this helps kind of give you a glimpse into the family dynamics a little bit, which, to be fair, I think some of this is just teenage rebellion, rebel behavior. You know, yeah. You're starting to come into your own. You think you're an adult. And so it could be part of that, but there could also be more going on there as well. But the relationship really smoothed out once Kane graduated and he moved out of the family's house and into town. He did remain very close with Carly, though. She entered high school. Now, 2018 started out with some pretty big shifts for Carly and her family. For one, her birth mother, Lindsay, moved 2 hours away to Nevada. On top of that, the Gousset family moved to the White Mountain Estates in nearby Chalfont Valley. So by car, they're about 20 minutes away. Carly could still maintain her friendships and continue going to school in Bishop Union, but Chalfont Valley was extremely remote. So it's just like a little neighborhood, essentially, kind of outside of town where people can, you know, have that real rural lifestyle while still being part of a community. Chalfont is an unincorporated community, and it has one business in the area, a restaurant known as Flo's Diner. And aside from that, residents need to drive at least 10 miles on Highway 6 to reach any other services. And still, despite all of this, Carly maintained her friendships and was a well-known, well-liked, popular girl. Many of Carly's best friends, including Taylor McCormick, said that their friendship began when Carly just walked up to her one day and said, "Hi, I'm Carly." Taylor's mother, Kimberly, who became friends with Goosey, said that Carly was a bright light and she was just pleasant to be around. And as Carly was about to enter her sophomore year in the fall of 2018, she had maintained good grades for her first year as she worked alongside her stepmother at a part-time job. But like most teenagers, you know, as you get older, sophomore year, you feel like you get more responsibility, you know, you get that driver's license, you know, things can start to change. It's also kind of when teenage relationships really start to pick up. And during that summer, Carly had started dating a boy named Donald. His last name isn't out there. And in fact, in this new little docuseries that was done by People magazine, they had his face blacked out as well. But Carly had known Donald for most of her life, and they had attended the same school since preschool. So really a guy that she had grown up with, was very, very good friends with way before they ever became romantic with one another. So it wasn't until the summer before Carly's sophomore year that they really started kind of taking the relationship to the next level here. But the people around them described their relationship as true teenage love. And for the most part, the relationship centered around Donald. Carly spent most days during the relationship hanging around with Donald or talking to him on the phone. She'd often walk down to the nearby bus stop to talk with him so that she could just have some privacy outside of her own house. And according to Lindsay, the two did go through a rough patch, and she told Carly that it might be best that this couple, you know, took a short break. However, this suggestion made Carly very distraught, and she was even shocked that her birth mother would suggest this. But for the most part, their relationship was, quote, very sweet, and they spent their day skateboarding, taking pictures of one another, and just doing normal high school relationship stuff. But again, they were still kids, and the two also found themselves in trouble time to time.
Now, around this time, Carly's grades did start to slip a bit. And since she had always been responsible and very honest with her parents, she never had any sort of restrictions or even a curfew. But her parents soon learned that she was smoking weed with Donald. And of course, they were concerned. Now, of course, they had dealt with similar issues when it came to her brother, Kane. But Carly still remained very open and honest with them about it and what she was doing. So even after that, she didn't have any restrictions or a set curfew. Now, it's unclear how much Zach and Melissa actually knew about Carly's weed smoking in the beginning, but either way, they seemed pretty open and accepting. However, Lindsay was very open to the weed usage. For one, her old Instagram name was Sativa Diva. And in one of her last texts to Carly, Lindsay asked if she had any weed, which is weird considering she lived over 2 hours away. Now, Carly's weed smoking only became a big deal for the family when she was caught being high during class. At first, Zach and Melissa were worried that this incident could result in a suspension, or worse, an expulsion. And luckily, Carly was placed at an alternative school on the Bishop campus for the remainder of the semester. This alternative school focused on behavior intervention and getting students back on track. The program lasted 5 weeks and required mandatory counseling sessions. Now, Carly really took this seriously. She was able to get her grades back up, and she didn't smoke at all the first month of the program. By mid-October, Carly was very excited for school again. She was almost done with the program and had already purchased her homecoming dress weeks in advance. She was really excited to get back in the groove of things. And by the morning of Friday, October 12th, things seemed to have finally sort of returned to normal. Melissa was getting ready to take Carly to school, and she started the morning by driving her to school and picking up Donald on the way. The drive seemed perfectly normal. Carly had just got new glasses, and Donald was taking Snapchats of her saying, "My baby can see again." Now, an interesting point is that Carly did have a car of her own. And even though Melissa was driving her to school that morning, we're not totally sure why that was. It's unclear if maybe her car was taken away as a punishment or if Melissa just drove her in the morning. That's just what they did for unrelated reasons. Not sure, but regardless, Carly had planned to take the bus home from school that afternoon while Melissa was at the trunk or treat event with her two youngest sons. However, since it was Friday night and Bishop Union was playing an at-home football game, Carly called Zach and asked if it was okay if she hung out with her friends and then went to the football game afterwards. Zach said yes, and Melissa planned on picking her up once the game ended. Now, since the game didn't start until 7, Carly and Donald had a lot of time after school finished for the day. They decided to go hang out with their friend James Dublin at his house, which was only about 2 miles away from Bishop Union. And this part of the night has been described as a party, but it doesn't really seem like that was the situation, because aside from James, Donald, and Carly, there were only like 4 other unnamed people in attendance. So yeah, what is that, like 7? This is more just like a kickback situation. And James's house was sort of known by his friends as the place where you could openly smoke weed without getting in trouble by anyone's parents. I'm not sure if that's because his parents were just down with it or they weren't home a lot. I don't know. But that was the place to smoke. And it seems like that's exactly what their group was planning to do that night before the game.
This episode of Mile High is brought to you by one of my favorite apps, ZocDoc. If you're not familiar, ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search, compare high-quality in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. And actually have a ZocDoc story for you. It actually happened this week. I've been kind of sick for the past couple of weeks. Maybe you've been able to tell from the past couple episodes. I've been dealing with a lot of congestion and blowing up a lot of green gunk. And I hadn't gone to the doctor yet because I thought, oh, this is just a cold. It'll go away. But then it all came to a head the other night. It's like 3 a.m. I wake up out of sleep and I have the worst sinus pressure I've ever experienced before. I have like a mind-numbing headache. My the area above my right eye is literally swollen. I can't sleep. I'm in agony. And so I was like, it's time that I go see a doctor. I need to go to urgent care. I need to get in as soon as possible this morning. And sure enough, I popped onto my ZocDoc app and I was able to get an appointment with an urgent care doctor for that morning, which really gave me some peace of mind, knowing that I was going to get the help that I needed. And that's all thanks to ZocDoc. They made it super easy. And before I knew it, I had an appointment scheduled at 3:30 a.m. For like 6 hours later. I mean, it's truly an amazing service. It takes all of the pain out of making a doctor's appointment. Plus, ZocDoc has providers for all specialties, including therapists. There's orthopedic surgeons. There's dentists. Whatever you may need to see a medical professional for, they will help you find it with real patient reviews on there. I love ZocDoc. I recommend it to everybody. It's the easiest way to book an appointment. You can even score same-day appointments. Or typically, you can get one within 24 to 72 hours. I mean, it really is the best way to schedule a doctor's appointment. So do what I did and stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go over to ZocDoc.com/milehigher to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/milehigher. ZocDoc.com/milehigher. Now, after not smoking for nearly a month since she got in trouble at school, Carly had been on her best behavior recently, and she decided that, you know, I was going to smoke some weed. While it's unclear whether Carly and Donald actually intended to go to the football game after they smoked, we're not really sure, but what's important is that they never made it there. According to Donald, Carly started getting scared of the music playing, and the group soon realized that she was acting really paranoid, which I'm so curious what kind of music was on. Like, did they have some, like, were they listening to, like, death metal or something? Like, I don't know. It's bizarre because it kind of seems to be a trigger for her behavior, possibly. I don't know. But she was concerned that someone was tracking her phone, and she started crying on and off. However, this surprised everyone in attendance because they said they all had been smoking the same weed, and yet it was affecting Carly in a much more intense way than the rest of them. And so they all began to get worried about her well-being, especially Donald. Meanwhile, Melissa was in Bishop at the trunk or treat event. She texted Carly and asked if she still needed a ride home, but she said not to worry since she could just get a ride from Donald. Once it got dark out, she packed up Cody and Cole and then drove back to the Chalfont house. However, back at James's house, Carly started panicking, and Donald convinced James to drive them to his house, which was only a few blocks away. James dropped the couple off out front before returning to the gathering. And now while Donald tried to comfort Carly, she turned to him with a terrified look on her face before she started shouting his name over and over again. Donald tried to hug her and hold her close, but this only freaked her out even more, and she pushed him away. He tried to hug her again, but this time she bit him and told him not to come near her again. Carly started dialing Melissa's number when she picked up. She then started running away from Donald, and of course, he was high and completely confused, but since he had heard Melissa answer the phone, he thought Carly would be okay, so he stood on the street as she was running away. Once she disappeared from his line of sight, he waited 20 more minutes before he returned to that gathering at James's house. Now, Melissa was just pulling into their driveway when she got Carly's frantic phone call, and this surprised her because it had only been 30 minutes since they had last spoke on the phone, and Carly said that she could just get a ride home from Donald. But this time that they're talking, it's very obvious to Melissa that Carly's demeanor has completely changed and she sounded absolutely terrified. Melissa quickly got the boys inside before telling Zach that she was going to head out again and go pick up Carly. Zach had just gotten home from work and had a few drinks already, so he was kind of already, kind of turning in for the evening and just really didn't think that much of the situation. But while Melissa drove, Carly begged for her to stay on the phone, and initially she said she was in the back section of the Highland Park neighborhood. However, her cell phone service stopped once Melissa got onto the highway and the call was dropped. When she regained service near Bishop, she called Carly and learned that she was running down Dixon over a mile from her previous location. So she's covering like a decent amount of ground in this panicked, frantic state, which is obviously very concerning. Melissa drove over a bridge on Dixon and saw a light bobbing up and down in the distance. And sure enough, this light was Carly running towards her with her phone's flashlight turned on. So it's just like, this is so bizarre. Immediately, Melissa said that Carly was pale as a ghost and her pupils were huge. They sat in the backseat for 15 minutes while Carly continued to freak out.
Upsetting to see your child like that running around outside and not freaked out and just be terrifying.
It's like she's having a bad trip. What I mean? Like she's having clearly a bad reaction to the weed that she smoked.
Yeah.
Seemingly on a whole other level, right? Mm-hmm. She's completely paranoid. She's frantic. She's in the back seat now, hopping between seat to seat. She's concerned about someone following her on the phone and tracking her and just completely out of her mind.
And imagine how scared she must have been running around outside in the dark alone with only your phone flashlight, which doesn't give you much light at all, especially in 2018.
Well, and out here in, a rural community like this, mm-hmm. it's not like there's street lights everywhere.
No. And when you're like tripping like that, when I say tripping, I just mean like super high.
Which I mean, it's like, I think that's kind of a misconception with cannabis is that can it make you trip in a similar way to a psychedelic?
Right.
It depends on who you are and your usage and also how much THC is in the cannabis. There's a lot of factors that go into
different
it.
Different strains and everything.
But you can absolutely have a bad trip or experience with cannabis to the point that you are in a panicked state like this. I mean, I think any of us, we're all cannabis users here. We've all had instances of like, maybe not to this extent,
no way,
by any stretch of the imagination, but like I certainly have had like spiraling moments where mm-hmm. too much THC, your mind is racing, your heart's racing, you're almost feeling like you're having an anxiety attack, panic attack, and you're definitely not in a right frame of mind where you can really think clearly about a situation that's going on. But it almost seems like Carly's experiences on a whole other level of almost like potentially even hallucinating or having a complete out of body experience. Just mm-hmm. perception is completely changed at this point. Like she just is like running from something, mm-hmm. it seems like. I don't know.
And the more we get into what she was experiencing, you'll see that even more, that it seems so extreme. And I think right off the bat, my mind goes to, like, I guess the closest thing I can describe it with is like acid or something, but I don't actually think that's the case. It's just, I've never been that high to where, I mean, once we start going through these things, it's kind of unbelievable to me that you could get into this type of state for this long just from marijuana alone, but you definitely can from, you know, what we've researched.
Well, there's a lot of factors that play into it, right? We're going to be talking about cannabis-induced psychosis, which is a very legitimate thing and something I don't think a lot of people really think about because it's not all that common. However, it, depending on who you are, your mental health history, there could be underlying things that you don't even know that you have. It's just the right circumstances can happen with your biochemistry where you all of a sudden go into psychosis and you never intended for that to happen, obviously. And I don't know. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, which is why people, as we'll talk about, jump to, was this weed laced with something? You know, was there PCP on this or something? Was there something else? Which again is incredibly rare. And there were other people who were smoking the same marijuana. So they weren't having the same reaction, which if it was laced with something, you would expect other people in the group or at this gathering to have similar experiences. And it doesn't seem that that's the case at all.
Yeah. Getting a bit ahead of ourselves here in this, the timeline, but I think it kind of almost helps to,
but it's just to think about all of these things as we proceed, I think is important.
Yeah, I agree. Now, Carly did tell the truth, saying that she never made it to the football game and instead just smoked weed with Donald and friends. And this surprised Melissa because she had seen Carly high before, but it was never like this. She initially thought that, you know, this had to have been too intense to just be marijuana, like we were saying. And as they finally began driving, Carly kept repeating, I'm sorry, and telling Melissa that she was driving the car too fast and that it would kill her. And according to Lindsay, Carly even grabbed Melissa's steering wheel at one point and veered the vehicle in the other direction. But please keep in mind that Lindsay wasn't actually there at the time, so this is completely unconfirmed. They returned to the house around 9 p.m., and Zach was shocked by Carly's behavior. She would act really scared and paranoid and then say things like, I'm sorry, I love you guys. And at this point, both Zach and Melissa were basically convinced that she had to have been drugged with something else, especially as her pupils remained very dilated. They asked her what she was afraid of, and she would respond, I don't know. Also, Carly's emotions kept going up and down throughout the night, and finally, Melissa thought it would be good if maybe she ate something. So she handed Carly a power bar and a chopped salad, which certainly doesn't seem like most people's first choice for a situation like this. I don't know why she chose.
Could have just
maybe
been
this
what
was
she
Carly's
had.
Favorite, or maybe Carly asked for it, or that's all they had. I don't know. But Carly kept saying odd things about it, saying that the salad was the devil's lettuce, which is obviously another name for marijuana. And then she kept requesting to go to church, which was really odd. So Melissa started recording the things that Carly was saying, hoping to show her later on when she was sober. And then her idea was kind of like, she's not going to do this again if she sees how she's acting and how freaked out she is later on.
One thing I wanted to mention is that high protein foods can cause a higher THC absorption rate, which can
really
like kind of enhance or prolong the high.
Oh,
I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but it's interesting that she, and I'm sure that, I'm not saying her mom purposely did that or anything, but
wow.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's for everyone, but yeah, high protein foods can enhance the absorption of it.
Interesting. And do we know if she for sure consumed it?
The power bar?
Yeah.
I think that's almost certainly. I mean, they've never said like, yes, she ate the whole power bar, but we know that those were the two things that were given to her and she ate some of it at least.
Okay.
Like, have you ever heard of, like, I remember in college, people were like, oh, eat peanut butter when you smoke weed. It'll make you higher because it has like protein in it.
No, I actually have never heard that, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, at some point, Carly asked if they could just go to bed and also if Melissa could come sleep with her. Carly had been really scared of her phone all night, so she left it on the kitchen counter, and they brought the salad with them, and Carly continued to say strange things as the night went on, and these would be recorded and become a source of much controversy later on. Finally, Melissa messaged Donald and said, "What did you take? All kids just say pot." That's what she said. After a couple hours, Carly asked if they could paint their toenails and read the Bible. She said that she was having, quote, demonic thoughts and couldn't help it. She also was doodling throughout the night and was focused on a particular piece of paper. Keep that in mind as well. And then at 10:15, Donald received a text from Carly's phone that said, "That shit was laced." And it has been speculated that Melissa sent this message since Carly was scared of her phone, but this is unconfirmed. I don't know. Just my opinion. I think it probably was Melissa, especially because she's texting him later on in the night, which we will get to as well. But Donald maintained that it was just weed, that they had all smoked the same stuff, and that Carly was the only one who started acting like this. Carly and Melissa went into the living room and watched a little bit of the movie Cool Runnings before they went back into Carly's room. And they held hands and talked for a while before settling into Carly's bed. And at this point, Carly was wearing a cream-colored t-shirt and underwear as well. Melissa looked over and saw that Carly's eyes were closed, but they were constantly moving underneath her eyelids. So definitely a lot of activity going on. Then Melissa texted Donald at 1:27 a.m. and said, quote, "Please pray." And then again at 2:12, just saying "Donald" with no response. And then she dozed off. So then Zach checked on them at 3:30 a.m. and he noticed that Carly's eyes were still wide open. And then later, Melissa would wake up again at some point and also saw that Carly's eyes were still open. At 5:15, Donald texted Melissa and asked if Carly specifically was doing any better. And Melissa said, "No, not really." And Melissa stayed awake with Carly until around 5:45, and then she dozed off again. However, when Melissa woke up again between 7:15 and 7:30, Carly was nowhere to be found.
And at first, Melissa called Carly's name to just see if she was still in the house. Then she searched Cole and Cody's rooms, because sometimes, if you remember, Carly would go and sleep with them. And, she wasn't there. So she started wondering that if maybe she left for a small early morning walk. But if she did that, usually Carly would almost always take the family dog with her, unless she was just going to the bus stop to speak with Donald or one of her friends on the phone. What was weird, though, is that Carly's phone was still on the kitchen counter in the same position she had left it in the night before. In addition to her phone, she had also left behind her new glasses, and most importantly, her wallet was there. And at this point, Melissa knew that something was wrong. She woke Zach up and told him that Carly wasn't in her bed. He got up and walked with Melissa, where they discovered that the front door had been cracked open. Outside, the temperature was around 40 degrees, and that's when they spotted a single footprint in the ice on their walkway. At the time, they thought the print looked a lot like Carly's. Zach and Melissa got in their separate cars to start searching the neighborhood. Zach drove his truck up the hill towards the back of the neighborhood, and once at the top, he used binoculars to scan the valley beneath. He also stated that he saw more footprints in this area, but it's unclear if he believed that they belonged to Carly as well. Zach also remembered when Carly had accidentally walked too far and called Zach to come pick her up. He assumed that this had happened again and simply, she just left her phone behind since she was just scared of her phone, if you remember, from the night before. And he hoped this meant that she was just somewhere else in their small neighborhood waiting to be picked up. And for a second, Zach and Melissa got hopeful. Melissa ran into their neighbor, Richard Eddy, who said he had seen Carly earlier in the morning while looking out of the window from his indoor hot tub. Richard said he saw Carly walking down the street and she was carrying a piece of paper and was looking up at the stars since the sun hadn't come up yet. According to him, Carly was wearing a white t-shirt and gray sweatpants, which this is important to remember as it becomes kind of a point of controversy later on. But we actually have a video clip of Richard Eddy kind of talking about this.
When she was busy, and I don't quite understand the whole thing, I was in my hot tub room. It's probably about 6:30, 7 o'clock. This happened a couple of years ago, so I'm just trying to guess at it. But I'd say between 6:30 and 7, and it was kind of chilly that morning, I remember. And for some reason, I looked out towards the street. I have big windows in the hot tub room. So I looked out towards the street, and I thought, that's unusual. There's a young girl walking by. She had long, kind of long brown hair. She had clothes on. She had a white, I think, I can't even remember, but I think she had a white top and maybe gray bottoms or something. But she had clothes on, but it was kind of chilly, and I thought, that's kind of weird that she would be there. And she was waving a piece of paper, like a 12 by 12 piece of paper. She was just waving it in the air and walked by.
I'm so curious what was on that paper. Sure, probably nothing of that much importance, but...
Maybe not. I don't know.
You know,
who knows?
Melissa believes that it was something that had to do with the counseling sessions that Carly was going to for the weed. But again, she just... That's just like her speculation. Guess. We don't really know. She was also doodling throughout the night, so it could be anything, really. But yeah, that's Melissa's guess.
Yeah. When I said nothing of importance, by the way, I meant like if it was the doodles, I'm sure it wasn't anything like super groundbreaking or like a clue or anything like that. But
well, then at around 8:28, Melissa texted Donald and said this: "I think it was more than weed. She's acting like she is on meth." The phrasing of this text, using is instead of was, led Donald to believe that Carly wasn't missing and was still with her folks at this point. Meanwhile, Melissa and Zach continue driving through their neighborhood and the surrounding area looking for any sign of Carly. Melissa described driving over desert rocks and small boulders while going to the desert valley near the intersection of Highway 6. At around 9:30 a.m., Zach called Lindsay to tell her what happened. And in another instance of poor phrasing, Zach started the conversation by saying, quote, "Lindsay, Carly's gone," which made Lindsay think that Carly had died. And this would plant the seeds for Lindsay to end up blaming Zach and Melissa for Carly's disappearance and maybe even her potential death. Finally, Melissa called 911 to officially report Carly as missing. However, during the call, she stated that Carly was wearing jeans and a sweater rather than her neighbor's description, which was the sweatpants and the white top. Which, again, this will lead to a lot of speculation later on in the story. But the Mono County Sheriff's Office dispatched a deputy to their home to obtain a formal statement from Zach and Melissa. And once they told the deputy about the situation, specifically that drugs were involved, the officer deemed the problem serious enough to dispatch search teams from all the county's departments. And there was even a helicopter in service nearby for a demonstration, which was even rerouted to aid in the early part of the search. Lindsay also arrived during the first day and felt, quote, "physically ill from the stress and not knowing where Carly could have gone." And if you look at this area around their neighborhood, it is just wide open space. It's just
nothing.
Prairie, flatlands, little to no trees out here. Desolate. This episode is also brought to you by another app that I use all the time, Cash App. Cash App is more than just a safe way to send and receive money. It's the best way to send and receive money. And I use it 9 times out of 10 over any of the other payment apps because it's just so convenient. It's easy to give my Cash App to other people to receive payments. And I really prefer to use it with vendors of all sorts, especially with like professionals around the house, handyman, plumbers, you name it. I always ask if they have Cash App because that is my preferred way to pay. They also have the Cash App card, which gets you tons of perks without hidden fees. You can think about early access to concerts, pre-sales like Kendrick Lamar and Sabrina Carpenter, plus discounts on everyday purchases at brands you're probably already spending money on. It also keeps your money safe by automatically flagging suspicious transactions and letting you lock your card instantly if you've ever lost or stolen it. It is the best app for transferring of funds. It's the safest way to do it. And honestly, I just love the whole UI of Cash App and the simplicity of it. There's really no better way than Cash App. And there's no better time for you and your friends to start using Cash App because for a limited time, new Cash App customers can earn $10 if they use code CASHAPP10 in their profile at sign up and use $5 or send $5 to a friend within 14 days. Terms apply. Cash App is a financial services platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partners. Prepaid debit cards issued by Sutton Bank member FDIC. Discounts provided by Cash App, a Block Incorporated brand. Visit cash.app/legal/podcast for full disclosures.
So one of the first things that officers did was go over to James's house to search and discover if there were any drugs on the premises other than weed. Now, we're not exactly sure what investigators tested aside from the weed that was currently in the bong, but still, they determined that nothing came back as laced or anything else was used at the house aside from marijuana. They also obtained doorbell footage showing Carly entering and exiting the house, she was walking fine, talking fine. She seemed happy-ish from what you could see in that footage. It's a bummer we can't play it for you guys. It's copyrighted, but she seemed in good spirit. She seemed okay.
Right. I mean, when she exits the house in the footage, she's holding Donald's hand and she's kind of leading him. So that's what's surprising about Donald's description about later on in the night where, like, he tries to hug her and she pushes him in a way and all that.
Yeah.
It's like within, you know, a matter of minutes, things got even worse.
Yeah.
You know, in her mental.
Yeah. You wonder, like, at what point did she start spiraling and how fast did that happen? I don't know. It's really, really odd. So the search was suspended on October 13 as the night came, and they knew that it would get extremely cold in the valley as the coyotes and mountain lions are going to enter the area once the sun went down. So a bolo was issued on Carly, but Melissa still wanted to do more. She decided to do the first of many Facebook Lives on the incident. This definitely got her a lot of feedback. This has been a big point of discussion in online communities on this case. Definitely a lot of judgment and people think, I don't know, I guess just see for yourselves. Now, just a heads up on this clip. We may not even be able to play the clip. We'll just see. If we're not able to play, we can try and link it below. But the only version we could find of this, someone has added like
circus music
in the background, which I'm sure is very hurtful. However, we have tried to source this elsewhere and it cannot be sourced. It is bad quality everywhere else, to the point where you just can't understand what she's saying at all. So just try to ignore.
We might be able to remove the music, actually.
Yeah,
potentially.
We'll try to do.
We'll see if Tom can work some magic on it. Sometimes we can remove
a lot of
music
pressure on Tom. We'll see. This is odd, though.
I want to put this on blast because I don't know what to do to consider her a missing person. You can't do an Amber Alert because she didn't leave in a car and I don't have a physical description of a vehicle. She is 5'7". Hold on. Let's do this. Good. Wait, there she is. She's 5'7", about 115 pounds. She has blue eyes and the cutest little nose and a great smile. And her hair goes all the way down past her, like, to her belly, let's say, mid-waist. And this was last year's picture. She's a little bit different, but not much. She's still, like, adorably cute. She doesn't wear makeup and everything. She left in her jeans and a t-shirt. So I'm putting it out there. And just go for it. Everybody help me out here. I love you all. Everybody please watch. Share your friends. Share my friends. Share everybody. So just share the shit out of it. All right. Thank you.
I couldn't tell if I'm worried that maybe some of the text was, I mean, obviously whoever made this video is not nice. So if there was something text-wise that we couldn't see since it was like double overlaid. Also, they were getting some of her captioning wrong. There's other, a lot of other lives as well. They have some other footage in that People magazine documentary if you want to check that out as well and see a bit more of like what people are talking about, why people have thought it's so odd. But also, it's like really hard to judge someone in a situation like that where you'd be so panicked and disoriented and it sounds like she barely slept. And I don't know. I think people were very harsh on her. Yeah, I mean, people have really gotten to the point where, or I'd say more so back then, I think things somewhat been cleared up now, where they were pointing their fingers at Melissa, saying that they thought she had something to do with Carly's disappearance. And some people sort of called out the interpretive elements, like her body language and speech patterns. And it is surprising that she continued to say that Carly was in her sweatshirt and jeans. It's confusing. I mean, the whole thing is so odd. I can't lie. It's It's bizarre. Okay, I'll say that. But I still don't think they had anything to do with it, in my personal opinion. Especially because the next day, October 14th, the FBI became involved. And dogs, horses, drones were all set loose to survey the area. Some tracker dogs could even follow her scent towards the bus stop on Highway 6. However, that's where the trail ended, which is super concerning. Anytime we're dealing with a major highway like that, you know, where your brain goes. Plus, a second witness, their neighbor, Kenneth Dutton, came forward and said that he saw Carly a little under an hour after the first witness had seen her. He said that she was wearing a white shirt and gray sweatpants and carrying a piece of paper as she walked towards the highway. Then on October 15th, a woodworker driving along Highway 6 said that he saw Carly standing by a barbed wire fence at the intersection next to the spots that the tracker dogs had alerted to. So then after that, the search continued for around a week and the helicopters surveyed the area at night using heat sensors. However, the search was called off after investigators found no more leads or witnesses. Volunteers, including Texas EquiSearch, we love them, continued searching the area, but law enforcement assumed a purely investigative role. And around this time, Dateline contacted the Gooseys and said that they planned to cover Carly's disappearance for an online article. And investigators urged Melissa not to participate in the interview as it was still an ongoing investigation. However, she wanted to get the word out, but decided not to tell the whole truth. This was a big mistake that you can tell she very much regrets. In this version, Melissa did not mention drugs and said that they had a family dinner together. Obviously, very far from the truth. I see why she did this, though.
Right.
She obviously doesn't want Carly to get a, you know, a bad reputation or be written off as a problem child or whatever, you know, and people do that. So, especially when it comes to teenagers, this is when she's going to get labeled a runaway or she's asking for it. You know, there's, as a mother, I would probably consider doing something like that as well to protect my child and give them the best chance of people caring about her case and spreading awareness, right?
Right. No, and I also believe this article was published only 2 weeks after Carly like first disappeared. So
yeah,
at this point, like now we're several years on, but at that point, you know, there's a very real possibility that Carly is not only out there and close by, but that she could be paying attention to her own coverage. And
yeah,
I don't know, that might just be so embarrassing, you know, to think right. about it from her perspective, like, fuck, all my dirty laundry is being aired out to the world right now.
Yeah, that's a great point as well. Like, she's also just trying to protect her reputation beyond that in case she does come back.
Yeah, well, we don't know the nature of her disappearance yet.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We don't know if there is foul play involved. We don't know if she just ran away.
Yeah.
We don't really know any of that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a great point to bring up.
So then she continued to not tell the truth. She said that she slept in Zach's room and did her usual morning routine to prepare the kids for school, even though it was a Saturday. So it was a big mistake. And that's when she discovered that Carly was missing. And in the years since, Melissa has, yeah, explained this alternative story by saying she didn't want to give Carly a bad reputation. So exactly what we were just saying. Or she also didn't want to give the exact timeline based on what investigators were saying. I think she's really confused. But still, this definitely even further pointed, you know, the fingers at Zach and Melissa, named by the internet, but also by Lindsay. So Lindsay started to claim that she heard the audio Melissa recorded that night of Carly, and stated that Carly asked her to call 911, but Melissa refused. And obviously, if you heard that, that doesn't sound good. Lindsay believed that Carly died that night of an overdose and that Zach and Melissa covered it up. She also claimed that Carly said, "You're going to kill me," to Melissa, which we do know that she did say.
Right.
And then all three spoke to Nancy Grace, where Lindsay repeated this theory. And Nancy also described the interview with Zach and Melissa as, quote, pulling teeth, as they both couldn't offer any easy answers to Carly's state of mind or whether any of her clothes were missing, which might be partially because Nancy Grace was like yelling at them and berating them on TV, which is a really stressful situation. And yeah, that's kind of on par for her. Anyway, So in addition to all of this, Lindsay believed that Zach and Melissa planted the footprints, even though there is no evidence of that whatsoever, which Nancy also brought up without question, which is frustrating. And then all three of them went on Dr. Phil, where Lindsay again pointed the finger at Zach and Melissa. Dr. Phil even asked if they could play the audio on the show, but at the time they declined. I'm sure now they would have. Instead, they played the audio for Dr. Phil privately, and he clarified that Carly didn't ask to call 911, but asked Melissa if she would call 911 if anything happened, to which Melissa said she would. So a huge difference there. And it's a shame that that rumor got spread around, because that certainly made everything a million times worse. Dr. Phil said that to him, it sounded like Carly may have been hallucinating, and he still pointed to the idea that the weed was laced.
Again, we have no proof that the weed Carly was smoking was laced. Weed can induce psychosis in people who are already predisposed to mental health issues, namely schizophrenia. This is something that happens. There's lots of studies on this, and it is always a possibility. While Carly didn't have any family history of schizophrenia, there were issues regarding mental health in the family. Carly's family said that she wasn't depressed in the days leading up to her disappearance, but many of her friends disagreed. They said that she had been smoking a lot more weed than her parents knew about before the incident at school, and she had been worrying about people tracking her through her phone for weeks. On top of that, she had Googled the number for the suicide hotline in the weeks before her disappearance, and her father, Zach, was put on antidepressants for his own mental health issues. It's also important to note that Zach was arrested in 2021 for corporeal injury to a spouse. And this is the only information on that particular event, and it's unclear if it was ever adjudicated, but it seems like Zach and Melissa are also still together to this day. But then on March 4th, 2021, her older brother Kane was arrested for pointing a firearm at another resident in his house before he pointed it at himself. Later that year, there was another incident when Kane went to his parents' house with his then-girlfriend, and an altercation took place in which Kane started stabbing himself and then held the knife to his throat, threatening to take his own life. And while Kane seems to be doing much better now, it's clear there were issues with mental health in the family, and it's possible that the weed didn't have to be laced for Carly to act the way that she did.
I also want to say that I think a lot of people think that it's like, oh, well, if you've smoked weed in the past, it's not, you know, as long as you've done it before, it's not going to randomly trigger psychosis. And that's not true. You can smoke weed a bunch of times in the past if you're predisposed to psychosis or schizophrenia, and then all of a sudden it can just happen. You know, one time when you do it. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, not to mention there's a million strains of cannabis with varying effects. And so it can affect everybody differently, right, depending on the day, the type of weed that you're smoking, the apparatus in which you're smoking it can affect the, you know, how high you actually get. So we don't, there's some things there we don't know. Like, we don't know, was it out of a pipe? Was it a bong? Was it, did she take a dab? I mean, we don't know any of these things. So it could have absolutely just been, she smoked a joint and that particular day and time she did it had this sort of effect on her.
Also, the average age for a first time psychotic episode is like late teens, early 20s. So right around that age range that she was in.
So it seems like all of us lean for sure towards this being the weed being not laced.
Yeah. I also just think, like, what would be the point at the high school, at a high school gathering, to lace one person and no one else and not tell her, you know, especially they're all friends. They all know each other outside of this gathering. And it just, I not only is there no proof, I just can't really think of like a reason for it leading up to it.
Yeah. It doesn't seem very common for high school either.
Well, and also the fact that weed was legalized in California in 2016. I just looked it up, and I don't know for sure in 2018, but there are dispensaries in Bishop. What weed were they smoking? If I had to guess, this was some form of legal marijuana that was probably obtained through an older, you know, friend, sibling, whatever, that likely was just, you know, maybe from a dispensary or from a reputable source, as opposed to maybe like some black market.
Right.
Who knows, you know, where it came from, weed. But again, I don't know. You could also still lace that as well. So, but I think the general consensus is that it's very unlikely that it was laced, because why would she be the only one having this reaction if others were there smoking with her? Why didn't they have similar reactions to that? Or was there something else that happened that we don't know about that somebody's covering up? I feel like that's also a possibility. Like maybe there's somebody who's not with, is withholding information about what actually was taken. Was there some other substance that was involved that just we don't know about? And I don't know, which again, they've investigated this. There's, you know, they've talked to everybody that was with her before she disappeared and nobody's said anything, but I just don't know. Cause again, I think people are hung up on her behavior, and really the only thing that provides an answer for that behavior is psychosis. What else is there? There's really nothing else that also, you can even consider.
Her eyes were dilated, which is interesting because weed actually does the opposite. It like constricts your pupils. So a lot of times people who are on THC have smaller pupils. Now I know that other drugs can make your pupils dilate, and also so can mental health conditions such as having a psychotic episode.
Definitely worth bringing up. So it's there's definitely something, if it's not psychosis, something else happened that we just don't know about that somebody's covering for potentially still to this day. But in the years since, there's been very little progress on this case, as you can probably imagine. A private investigator was hired by the Gousses, and this private investigator claimed to have found blood and clothes in the desert. But investigators say that they did not belong to Carly. And this particular private investigator had interesting methods for investigating, mm-hmm. including using dowsing rods to find bodies, which if you know anything about dowsing rods, not all that reputable method. You know,
can you kind of explain it a little bit for those who don't know?
I'll let you.
Yeah, it's odd. So I found an article about this guy because the way it's described is like, oh, he had a particular tool that would lead him in the direction. But in reality, like dowsing rods are used among spiritualists mainly to like find parts of the earth that are, you know, have a higher amount of electricity, electromagnetism. So he was teaching, he taught literal classes where he would use dowsing rods, which kind of, you know, you've seen them. They're like those two metal rods you hold in. And he was using them and saying like, this is a way to track bodies. So that's, he would say that they would point in the direction.
There's just nothing scientific about it.
Right.
Methods. Whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Now he was also using regular tracking dogs in this case, but you know, he also was using the dowsing rod. So I think people kind of seem to get hung up on this guy being like, no, he found blood. And but it was sent to investigators, and investigators were like, this is not Carly. This is something else.
As many of you out there know, Kendall and I have a lot of pets at home. We have three cats that we love dearly. They're all starting to get up there in age. One of our cats has a chronic disease. He's doing well, considering all things. But one of the things that's really helped turn his health around and just made him an overall happier cat is Smalls Cat Food. This podcast is sponsored by Smalls, and the reason why we love Smalls so much is that it is protein-packed food, high-quality ingredients. It's basically fresh, unlike that canned goop that you get from the store. Our cats go wild for Smalls. Every time I break open a Smalls pack, they come running down the stairs. They're lining up for their Smalls cat food. They love it. They love all of the different blends, so you can really fine-tune and try a bunch of different things. See what your cat prefers when it comes to the flavors. My cats love the ground bird recipe. They just think that that tastes the best, I think, and I don't blame them. It looks honestly not that bad. Sometimes I might sneak a bite or two. But Smalls is made with preservative-free ingredients that you'd find in your fridge, and it's delivered right to your door, and it's no wonder that cats.com, people, name Smalls their best overall cat food. And it's so easy to get started with them. You just share info about your cat's diet, health, and food preferences, and then Smalls puts together a personalized sampler for your cat. So there's no more picking between random brands at the store. Smalls is the right food to satisfy any cat's cravings. And it doesn't matter how many cats you have, they got you covered. Smalls also has a bunch of amazing treats and snacks that you can add to your order as well, which my cats truly love all of their different treats, and they love their catnip toys. If you haven't had your cat try some catnip, it's a fun thing to watch. After switching to Smalls, 88% of cat owners reported overall health improvements, and I would be I'd be one of the 88% because I think my cats are overall feeling healthier. You can tell they're happier. They've got those happy meows going, lots of purrs. It's amazing to watch cats that are over 10 years old truly living their best life, and the team at Smalls is so confident that your cat will love their product that you can try it risk-free. That means they'll refund you if your cat won't eat their food, so you really have nothing to lose. Give Smalls a try. Our cats love it, and I know your cats will too. So what are you waiting for? Give your cat the food they deserve. For a limited time, because you're a Mile Higher listener, you get 60% off your first order plus free shipping when you go over to smalls.com/milehigher. One last time, that's 60% off your first order plus free shipping, but you got to go over to smalls.com/milehigher. But the most recent tip that came in 2021 was when an ex-addict in Tonopah, Nevada, claimed to have seen Carly at a party when an incident occurred. And police even found the make and model of a car that he claimed took Carly to the area. However, this lead has not been updated since 2023. But it is an interesting lead because it puts her in a totally different location that she could absolutely travel to from Bishop up into Nevada. So is it possible that there's any credibility to that? We really don't know at this point. Could be, but maybe not. But there's other theories out there that have persisted as well. One YouTuber made videos on his dirt bike, released a video with a thumbnail that had her missing poster. And then there's a screenshot of him on his dirt bike. And there's an arrow pointing to a girl. And this video had 25 million views. It was posted by Joey Mack. The title says, "Found missing teen in mountains, called 911. But this girl, although this video is weird, it was another girl who had run away from her home with her boyfriend, and he just made a very, very misleading thumbnail, which caused a lot of people to believe that she had been found, because it literally has her face in the thumbnail, which was not helpful whatsoever.
It's very irresponsible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and like, even when I was researching the case, I came across people who made relatively recent TikToks who obviously didn't watch the video, because if you watch the video, he says like, it's not Carly. But still, they made TikToks where they're like, look, this guy found her in the desert, like as of only a couple years ago. And so I think like, bro, you've got your 25 million views, change the thumbnail.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's just, take it
it's
out.
It's just so, yeah, that really pisses me off. You are very, very clearly intentionally doing this. Try to get fame and views off of a young girl's disappearance. It's pretty sick, in my opinion.
But there's even wilder theories that came out. There was one that believed that Carly was being held against her will and forced to make mukbang videos on YouTube under the account name Kate Yup.
Kate Yup, yep. Kate Yup, yep.
And if you do any shred of research on this, you can find out very quickly that Kate Yup is not Carly Gousset whatsoever.
Yeah, it was so annoying.
People were just making up all sorts of strange.
There was so much talk about it at the theories. Time that I covered this. And I remember even after, you know, because in my episode, I was like, no, this, like, let me address this. This is not, you know, a thing. And there were still so many comments that were like, people were really convinced of that theory. Hardcore. So.
Yeah, it's just wild because it's definitely been debunked.
So ridiculous.
I think a more plausible theory that a lot of people tend to lean towards is that Carly was potentially abducted or trafficked off of Highway 6 just minutes before Melissa would have seen her on the corner. And also, if you remember, the tracking dogs actually tracked her scent to the bus stop, and then it stopped. It didn't go any further. So it seems like, especially since the scent stopped at the road, that most likely she got into a vehicle and left the area. And I think, as many of us know, California does have one of the highest rates of human trafficking in the country, and Highway 6 is one of the longest routes that connects the East Coast to the West Coast. I mean, you can get from one state to another in a matter of hours or even less. It's, as we've seen in lots and lots of other cases, there are a lot of missing, especially missing women and indigenous women from highway towns, highway cities all over the United States. Because there's predators traveling all up and down these highways. And all it takes is that opportunity to arise and someone is abducted and never seen again. It happens all the time. It's also possible that maybe she somehow arranged to be picked up by somebody that she knew. Seems unlikely since her phone and technology and accounts were searched and there is nothing that indicates this. But is it possible that somehow she got picked up by somebody? Maybe it was like she was hitchhiking. I mean, we don't know. But it's possible she left the area at this point. Or maybe she just simply walked out into the vast expanse of open land around this area. And then just potentially, if it was an overdose of some kind, if she did overdose on some other substance or something like that, she succumbed to the elements and then her remains have just never been found. Seems a little less likely to me because I feel like there was enough searching in this immediate area by professionals that they would have found her remains.
Yeah, it's been a long time since. How far could she possibly have gone where they wouldn't?
Yeah, I mean, in that short amount of time, I mean.
And she overdosed that much time later or got her hands on something else?
Yeah.
I just don't, I don't think.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
If I truly think that and this is just my opinion, but I think the evening before and everything that happened really has nothing to do with the disappearance. I think she left her house because of that. She was obviously in a bad headspace, maybe not mentally, but because of the weed. She was obviously like a really, really tough time with that. I think that's why she left her house. And then I think that she just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and the wrong person got a hold of her. And I don't know exactly, you know, what happened from there, but my instincts say that she was probably trafficked, especially because being right so close to Highway 6, you know.
Yeah, it's the unfortunate reality, but
yeah,
it definitely is there. It definitely is there.
But I mean, that being said, there's still a possibility that she's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes me feel like a little shred of hope. But I don't know. What do you guys have? Any thoughts?
I tend to lean more towards that. I mean, I think, you know, because it really is only a matter of minutes between when the woodcutter saw her and when Melissa would have driven past that intersection. So mm-hmm. it's like whatever happened happened really fast.
Yeah,
right. So it's like, barring that, I tend to kind of lean towards this Tonopah tip from this guy who thought that he saw her there. They found the vehicle. And the fact that we haven't heard anything since the People magazine documentary, I don't know if that's either because they found nothing or maybe they did find something and they're still just investigating that lead and they can't release it to the public. That's my hope, is that that lead actually was fruitful, did lead to something, and you know, they're just working the case still.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. I hope that's the case. Yeah.
I mean, if she was trafficked, they've somehow been able to confirm that through that tip that they got. Mm-hmm. Maybe they discovered a ring or something much bigger that they're investigating or trying to break into. I mean, that there's those types of things going on as well. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's all bizarre. It's marijuana experience potentially had nothing to do with her disappearance is interesting. Because I think a lot of times people are trying to tie the two together. One thing led to another, as opposed to maybe this was an entirely separate incident, a scenario that just for some reason caused her to end up on Highway 6. But part of me is like, was this experience with marijuana a like turning point for her in another way? And, you know, she was carrying that piece of paper. And what was that piece of paper? Was that something to do with her counseling? Was she just like done with all of that? Was she done with the whole situation at home? Was she like, I'm going to hop in a car and get as far away from here as I possibly can. I'm just going to take off. Because then part of me is also in, like, curious about the whole religious aspect that was going on here, the things that she was saying and all of that. Is there more to that conversation? I don't know. What was she leaving to go get help? Was she leaving to go start anew somewhere? Was there somebody that she knew? Or maybe that's why I think there's got to be more to this that just we don't know about. And I feel like someone within her circle potentially, because I think we're missing like a detail to this. Who are these guys? Where are they getting their weed from? Let's follow that trail. Where does that lead to? Who are they really hanging out with? Are they connected to other people? Is there a drug dealer that they're getting this weed from who knows somebody else in Tonopah that she was told to go meet with, that they told her, like, hey, go meet her buddy in Tonopah and he'll hook you up with whatever, or help you find a new place to stay, or, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's something just missing. We're missing an element of the story here that would help clear up some of these questions.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I think with the FBI involved, they probably, I mean, I guess there could be stuff that's not released, probably. And that's kind of seems how it's been with this case from the beginning, is there's been information that's like slowly released over time. But I don't know. I don't think she was capable of, like, on this night of actually like executing a plan to leave or anything like that. And I, as interesting as it is to think about the religious element of things and what she was saying, then I don't know if that really.
What if she was fearful for her life? She did say that to Melissa. What if there, but like, I don't know. Like, even in that state of like, maybe she really thought like my life's at danger here. I can't stay here at the house anymore.
I think
so I need
that's
to
a
leave.
Possibility. Yes, I completely.
And I need to go stay somewhere else. I need to get out of town. I need to get away from them. I need to get away from the situation, whatever it may be.
I think that's probably likely, actually, that she left because she felt fearful for some reason, and or like, but as far as going and meeting up with a specific person and having to do with the boys, and I don't know. That seems like far fetched to me. It's an interesting thing to think about, and who knows? Who knows? There could be a lot that we don't know. With what we do know, I don't think that was the case, in my opinion. I don't know. It's kind of crazy to think about all of that. I think at the end of the day, what I do know, I guess I don't know for sure, but what I feel fairly certain on is that Melissa and Zach had nothing to do with this. Obviously, their behavior, especially Melissa's, has been like a little odd. And I see where people have gotten it from. Not that it's justified at all, the way that people have treated her. But I can't imagine how horrible of a situation it would be to be in. Your child is missing and there's a million things running through your head of what could be happening to them, what they could be experiencing. And then on top of that, people are judging you and accusing you of killing them, especially when another family member gets involved in that. I really feel for them. And I know that the FBI has cleared them, so I hope that we don't see a whole lot of that. I'm sure we will. This is the internet. But yeah.
Well, let's listen to that audio.
Okay.
Of the interactions.
Right.
Between Melissa and Carly for the first time.
Melissa, do you want to take a shower? If you'll make you feel better?
Mm-hmm.
No.
You're going to kill me.
Carly, listen to what you just said to me.
What?
You said you're going to kill me.
Don't kill me.
Why would I kill you? That's preposterous. That's ridiculous.
I'm eating the devil's lettuce.
You're eating lettuce that I just freshly chopped that I bought from the grocery store.
I don't know why. I'm just.
Why do you think it's the devil's lettuce?
Because I'm just thinking all these demonic stuff that can't help it. You wouldn't call them?
Why are you looking at them?
Yeah, you just said you wouldn't. Would you call them?
911? Just for what reason? If there was an emergency? If there was an emergency, yes, I would always call 911. Yes. I don't know. It's all to my face.
I have to look at you.
No, you don't. Is she think I'm ugly?
No, I'm not.
You're beautiful.
Really, what that proves, though, is like all of these, like the way it's been presented for years of like, this was an evil, like, oh, it was so bad. It's like,
yeah,
I mean, it sounds like Melissa, I mean, my mom used to do that with me when right. I was high. Like, it sounds like she's kind of like messing with it, trying to point out how ridiculous she's being, you know? It seems to me that Melissa thinks like, yeah, this is more intense than usual, but it's like, we're going to get through it. Like, she doesn't really sound that alarmed, which I don't blame her. I wouldn't either. It's just like, I want to comfort my kid while they're obviously scared of something.
Mm-hmm. And it also made me think, could Carly have just been saying, you're going to kill me, as in I'm going to get in trouble, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. I just think that was all really overblown. I'm glad that they released that finally because, people went pretty wild with that. So Lindsay, Zach, and Melissa did hold a press conference on the anniversary of Carly's disappearance. And while their relationship between the three of them is non-existent, as far as we know, Lindsay no longer says that it was Zach and Melissa's fault. So that's also, I think, has cleared things up to some degree. So let's take a look at that press conference.
A piece has been taken from me that only can be replaced by her safe return. And she is loved by so many. Please, please, And to everyone who watches this, please spread her picture as much as possible and as far as you can in hopes that the right person will see it and bring my little girl back to all that loves her. And if someone out there does think they see her, call the tip line immediately or call 911 immediately.
Also, this was really sweet, but when Carly's class graduated, her name was still called, and Zach and Melissa collected her diploma while the crowd was cheering. Now, if you have any information concerning Carly Lane Gousset's disappearance, you are encouraged to contact the Mono County Sheriff's Office by emailing them at carlygousset@monosheriff.org. And that is KARLIEGUSETIPS. Or you can call them at 760-932-5678. You may also contact the Sacramento office of the FBI by calling 916-746-7000. You can also contact your local FBI office or the nearest American embassy or consulate. You can even submit a tip online at tips.fbi.gov, and all tips remain anonymous.
I'm hopeful that maybe she still is out there.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
And maybe she'll find her way back at some point, or at least make contact with her parents one day.
Maybe.
But again, that's just
wishful thinking.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. This one is really puzzling. There's in my mind, there's just something missing. There's a detail missing. In my mind, I think somebody knows more than what we know, or perhaps maybe law enforcement is aware of more information. They just aren't sharing it because they're investigating.
Mm-hmm.
Additional leads and things like that. And I'm hopeful that that's the case. And this isn't just sitting in a cold case file somewhere, not being,
I don't think so,
actively investigated anymore.
I mean, who knows? That very well might be the case, but I don't know. There's so much interest in this case. And I think that's mainly because the events leading up to her disappearance are so bizarre.
It's very bizarre.
And I think sometimes, a lot of the time, actually, when there's a case where there's a possibility that they may still be out there, people do kind of hold more interest. And I'm glad for Carly's sake that that is the case. I think this case has been like fairly popular. And some of that is because of probably that dude's video and the Kate Yup thing. And if that's what got her case attention, then so be it. But yeah, just horrible. I feel bad for everyone involved, their whole family and all of her brothers. Just horrible.
We'll definitely leave links in the show notes and description to her NCMEC page, as well as the FBI page and Facebook group. So if you want to share any of that information, I'm sure family would greatly appreciate it. But as always, let us know your thoughts on this case. What do you think happened to Carly Gousset? But we're going to go on and wrap up today's episode there. We're going to actually leave this episode out with a few clips from Melissa and Zach. Talking about Carly and the effect that this has had on them.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see you guys next time.
With this disappearance, one of two things happened. And I know that for sure. One of two things. I used to think one of three, but I threw the third one out because I don't believe she ran away. I think she would have been found. I don't think she's that smart. She was 16. I mean, I don't even know if I could run away. So I finally threw that one away, and I'm down to two things. I'm down to she either crossed that desert so far that nobody found her, or she was abducted. She got in the wrong car and with the wrong person. And I'd like to say to that person that may God be with you. May God forgive you. Because I won't at all. I don't know if that's right to say or not. I don't know, but that's what I wanted to say. That's exactly how I feel. I mean, I don't want to put her in any more harm's way, but it's gone so long now that, I mean, I've heard somebody say, oh, they give their right arm to save their child, you know, to an abductor or something. I'd give my whole body and soul. I'd give it all up just to have her home safe.
I miss driving her to school. I miss working with her because she worked with me. I miss arguing with her. I miss her stealing my clothes out of my closet. I just miss all the little things that you take for granted. Life's not fair. You feel like you're failing at it all because you don't have an answer and you just don't have anything. Going out and searching, walking this whole entire thing, driving for days, walking across Fish Slough, the helicopters, everything. And all we could find was her footprint. And it was just, you need to go search more. You need to go do this. Everybody has their advice. But you don't know what advice to give because you don't know you're not in those person's shoes. The only good advice that anybody ever gave me was just keep hopeful. Because your mind wanders.